Multi-instrumentalist composer Chris Brubeck is influenced by classical, rock, funk, New Orleans, swing, and everything in between. The influence of his father, pianist-composer Dave Brubeck, and the lyric writing of his mother, Iola, have also inspired him and continue to inform everything he pursues in his constantly evolving musical life. Chris Brubeck and I got together in Manhattan to discuss his long career and his latest Brubeck Brothers CD, Timeline, a celebration of the 60th anniversary of the Dave Brubeck Quartet's historic State Department tour. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I started by asking Chris Brubeck what kind of music was playing around the house when he was growing up.
Well, there was mostly jazz. Like, I really can't recall ever, like, hearing my dad playing, quote-unquote, you know, real classical music.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, my dad's mother was a classical pianist. And if grandma was around, not only did she play classical piano, but she's one of these ladies that insisted on wearing about 30 bracelets per arm. She was like the original Mr. T or something. And so, and I remember there was, and you probably know this tune with your style of piano. You know that tune called Nola?
Of course.
She'd play it, and pretty soon it was like a slinky on her forearm. It's like,
it's hilarious.
You know, that's what I heard.
She had her own percussion.
She did. I mean, totally unconscious of doing it. She wasn't trying to be hip. It was just part of what came with grandma and her perfume or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, so there was that kind of stuff. And then we had a lot of children's records, like, but they were kind of hip in a way. It's like the real music of orchestral Scheherazade.
Oh,
but
interesting.
It wasn't literally Disney, but it was like, you know, and so Aladdin went into the market, but he hid in the, you know what I mean? It was like a narrated thing, but they would have real classical music. So I got into the intertwining of classical music.
Uh-huh. It's fascinating because it's had such a big effect on you. I assumed that you listened to a lot of this when you were a kid, but you didn't. Just when your grandmother came over, something like that.
Right, right. I heard lots of great jazz. And while we're on the subject, I'll tell you something that I think is funny and interesting, is that my dad would be working at nightclubs in San Francisco, like the Black Hawk, which was a sort of a famous place. And he'd get in like at 3 in the morning, and my mom would say to me and my 4 siblings at that time, "Don't be quiet. Your dad's been working late. Be very quiet in the morning." So we all had these tiny little record players that you could get for about $15 or something, and we would listen to music to be quiet. So one of the things we were listening to was music from Disney movies. And so Dave would be asleep through the wall, and we were being quiet, but he starts hearing, da 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 da, and pretty soon he starts hearing, do 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 do. And after a while, in this subconscious thing, Dave starts thinking of these tunes and goes, you know, those would be pretty hip jazz tunes. Dave was the first guy to record those tunes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was like, someday my prince will come. Miles Davis came into a club at the Black Hawk, heard Dave playing that. Mm. The next Miles Davis record, I think, was called Someday My Prince Will Come. Thank you.
it's an obvious connection to your father, but your mother had a huge influence on you. I want you to talk about that with lyric writing.
Well, the whole thing. First of all, my mom was a really brilliant, high IQ kind of lady. But coming from the era she came in, she also didn't consider a waste of her energy to be a great mom and do all those motherly things. But people like George Wein, kind of old-timers in the jazz industry, they know that my mom was the first person to even realize this concept of like, jazz is a music that takes more intellect to appreciate what it is, like as opposed to I kicked my dog and my wife left me country music, which some of is great, but you know what I mean? You don't have to be into Byron or Shelley to comprehend that, you know?
Right.
So my mom said, well, how do we go to a place where there are smarter people? And so she's the one that came up with, I know, I'll start writing to colleges and say, why don't you try having a jazz group? And it was really my mom was the first person to organize that whole business concept of jazz. And that's why Dave's early record summer called Jazz Goes to College. And she got...
That was your mother's idea.
Yeah. And she was so into it that she even created a pamphlet book kind of thing, you know, like a 30-page book. How to promote a jazz concert. This is what you do. You rent the hall. Here's a contract. Here's your done. The radio promotion, newspaper ads, stories, you know, the whole thing. How would you do it right? She was sending that stuff out.
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And once in a while, I'll meet someone like the famous, you know, pop singer Seal, right? I ran into his manager at some sort of industry function. He was saying, oh, yeah, I remember your dad and your mom. You know, I was going to a college in Maryland, and I promoted a concert. And we didn't do so well, and your dad was so amazing because he gave me a break, you know? We had a certain amount of money we got on. He knew I took a bath. He said, oh, forget it, kid, you know? And he, like, with all that good karma just building up over the decades, you know, I'm always running into the ripples of it.
But it's fantastic when you think about it, because that's one of the biggest difficulties in this field is how do we get the word out? You and I were talking before we started recording just about some festivals that I did, and you said, oh, well, they're not into what I do, and then I have that with other ones that they'll, my thing has always been, they'll have 10 people who play bebop-influenced piano, but they have one stride piano player, that's enough. You know, it's sort of that. So they're not, a lot of the people aren't open-minded. They don't have a lot of imagination, and here your mother came up with a whole concept of how to promote it, which had to influence you too, because you've made your living doing this.
Yeah, that totally did. And you know, people will say, well, what about your family? There's so many musicians, you know, is it genetic or is it environmental? And you know, it's really all those things. I mean, I think most of all what it is some kind of karmic thing that maybe I don't understand. But
really?
Yeah, something like, for example, I know you've toured India. When Dave was in India, and even my brother Dan recently was back to India, it's very commonplace that there are families of musicians, generation after generation. So, you know, some of that is environmental. Like, you know, like if you would say, you know, I really want to be a professional musician, and maybe a parent of a normal family would say, are you crazy? How are you going to pay the bills? You know, but, you know, you already have parents that are crazy and sort of you have faith in their abilities and their talent, and somehow they've managed to pay the bills, you know, and they won't be hypocritical, so they won't discourage you.
I'm told a lot on this show, not surprisingly, because I'm talking about what inspires people to get into this, and it's always from people, at least my guess, they somehow were in an environment that made this look attractive.
Mm.
And some are fortunate like you, and they're surrounded by massively talented people, so the level of what they're getting to listen to and be exposed to, whether it's the business model, the music, all of that is great. But everybody has someone along the way who introduces them to this as a delicious thing to get into.
Yeah. Thank you.
Guest Chris Brubeck on his composition Three Wise Men from his new CD Timeline. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. So did you assume from a young age that you would study music, or was it something that you said, I want to do? I was curious about that as well. I mean, did your family just think this is a good thing for our children, we're going to give them music lessons?
Yeah, I think they thought it was a good thing. But like, for example, I'm the third oldest in our family. Mm. My oldest brother Darius was already playing piano and trumpet. Mm. My next older brother Michael was playing sax and not so much piano at all. And my dad wanted me to start playing piano. And actually, even at five, I was smart enough to know, like, I think I got some people in this household that have covered the piano.
You already had a good business sense.
if not my dad, already my older brother. You know, so I said, I don't really want to do that. But then my dad did sort of the fatherly, I know best thing.
Right.
And he said, I really want you to take piano. And he says, look, I don't care if you become the best pianist, but I want you to learn to play piano, because I know that out of that, you're going to learn how to read treble clef and bass clef and notation. And someday you might want to be a composer and you'll have those tools.
Mm.
This is my five-year-old lecture. And it came from my dad, because even though some people know that my dad wrote massive amounts of classical music with chorus and orchestra and wrote a lot of things, he really was dyslexic or some kind of alphabetic disability when he was little, very cross-eyed and strange glasses.
Oh,
and
wow.
And so he was never a good reader of music. So a lot of people think, oh, he's like Andre Previn, who plays jazz and does all this classical thing. But Andre Previn probably could go to the Royal Conservatory or whatever and get straight A's and be the star of his class. My dad wasn't like that at all. He the whole process of reading and writing music didn't come to him well till later in his life through composing and this very slow motion that his reading chops get together. On the other hand, his ears were, like the Ray Charles movie or something, because when he went to college, because he grew up on a cowboy ranch, he was the third son and the last hope for Grandpa Pete, the cowboy that was, his father. His older brothers were already musicians, and he thought, oh, my God, I don't want another damn musician, So my dad went to veterinarian school at University Pacific in Stockton, and then he would start doing gigs on the side. He'd already done them even in high school, where he'd, play gigs all night for the miners around Sutter's Creek and things like that. And then he'd come home and then, have to change out of his gig clothes to put on his chaps and then go out and sunrise with the, the cattle.
Such a great image.
Yeah, and he really did all that stuff. So, I just started thinking about Dave and his cowboyness. I think I got
well,
that
it's so. But what I get from this is how encouraging it is to other people who feel that you have to have these skills from the get-go. That you have to be a great reader, you have to be this, you have to be that. And Dave wasn't a great reader.
Oh, that reminds me of where I was going. is that so he went to college to be a veterinarian because he could help, you know, have cattle getting birthed and things like that. It was sort of getting away from home and going to school, but yet pleasing, you know, Grandpa Pete and what he was going to do. And then he sort of had to take some chemistry and almost blew up the lab at the college. And the people said, Brubeck, will you just get the hell out of this department? Go over across the little green and go to the music school. That's
so
where you belong.
So even they knew.
Yeah. So then he ended up there. And because of his ears, he did great. And only in his final written exam, where he sort of couldn't ear his way out of a situation, they said, oh, my God, this guy really sucks. You know, we can't graduate them. And then the other staff, he's the most talented guy we've ever had. How can we not pass him? And there was actually a meeting between department heads and the school and stuff. And the deal was, they said, we will let him graduate, but he has to promise to never teach because he's unqualified.
Oh, and that's interesting.
And my dad thought he came out really smelling like roses to get that in the deal.
Dave Brubeck Quartet on Pennies from Heaven. My guest is Dave's son, multi-instrumentalist Chris Brubeck. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Chris's CD, Timeline, celebrates the 60th anniversary of Dave Brubeck's State Department three-month-long tour in 1958. What people don't think about, I think a lot, is that this was 1958. And they'll think of the 50s with whatever images they have of that. But this wasn't that long after the war. Things were very, very different in Europe. And that's what you're really addressing, that it was dangerous to go to some of these countries. And the State Department, in my knowledge of it, was figuring a lot of these things out post-World War II themselves.
Yeah.
So they didn't have it totally together.
They didn't. I can't remember exactly which country, but some country that Dave and the quartet had been in had a coup shortly after. Like, you know, within days or something. And I remember that that he told me he met this guy that was called, you know, the hero of Kabul or something, because he had taken a city through a great sort of trick, like you'd see from an old Hercules movie or something, where he got lots of goats and donkeys and put lanterns on them at night, coming down all the hills, and the people below said, "Oh my God, he's got a huge army!"
The Brubeck Brothers Quartet on the Golden Horn. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Thank you. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Our show is made possible in part with generous support from Steinway & Sons and from East Hampton Indoor Tennis, 8 indoor and 20 outdoor courts in a quiet, beautiful park-like setting. Visit ehit.ws for more information. Additional funding is provided by Page at 63 Main in Sag Harbor, New York, serving organic microgreens and vegetables grown on their own energy-efficient indoor and outdoor aquaponic farms. Better taste, happier planet. Visit Page at 63 Main at opentable.com. For a schedule of upcoming programs, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can listen to free podcasts of Jazz Inspired on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Stride Queen. I'll be appearing at Schmidt's Music in Minneapolis September 5th, the Patchogue Theater in Patchogue, New York September 26th, and Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor, New York October 4th. Support for Jazz Inspired is provided by Jazz Times Magazine, providing entertaining and provocative coverage of the jazz scene since 1970. On the web at jazztimes.com. I'm talking with multi-instrumentalist Chris Brubeck about his father's historic State Department tour. Chris's most recent CD, Timeline, celebrates the 60th anniversary of that tour.
Now, on the completely positive side of this, this tour was really important because my father was lucky enough after World War II to study with Darius Milhaud, the French composer, who was in exile because he was a French Jew and his apartment was seized in Paris by the Nazis. And so he was able to sit out the war over in Mills College in Oakland, California. My dad studied with him, and you'll appreciate this because you're a pianist and my jazz pianist specifically. And my dad said to me, "Oh, why do you want to study with me?" And he says, "Oh, because I want to learn about orchestration, and I have a big dream of writing, you know, a big piece and big music. And I just think it would be the greatest thing in the world." And he said, "Oh, that's very interesting, because me and my French composer friends, we think that the coolest thing that's going on in the world is American jazz. And we wish we could play it. Will you play some boogie woogie for me?"
Oh, perfect. That is, that's
coming
great.
Coming from this very sophisticated, you know, composer guy.
You talk about it in the liner notes, how this tour also, they kept integrating music from other parts of the world. And so it's like the first example of world music, really.
Yeah, and it was Mio that said to my dad, "It's really important when you travel, listen, and get those influence into your music. And then you can innovate and you can transform your music and increase the musical language." And Mio had done the same thing because he was the first European composer to come during the Harlem Renaissance and listen to jazz and put those blues scales and a saxophone into his piece called Creation of the World. And it predates Gershwin, but you'll find similarities, you know, to it. So he had that kind of mantra, you know, my teacher told me, listen. And so, you know, sort of now in hindsight, you know, a sort of great moment in jazz history is when Dave hears street musicians playing in this wacky rhythm that turned out to be in 9/8 time. And that was the essence of what propelled him to write Blue Rondo a la Turk.
the Brubeck Brothers Quartet on their father's composition, Blue Rondo a la Turk, from their CD, Timeline. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I'm talking with Dave's son, multi-instrumentalist composer, Chris Brubeck. One of the things that really impressed me about this CD, Timeline, that you managed to keep putting new spins on these songs that I know you've played 2,000 times. And that's one of the things that people want to hear, those songs that they know. And unlike pop artists, where people want to hear it exactly the same way, and it actually throws them off. As jazz musicians, we get to change it.
Yeah.
But the challenge is, how do we change it? And how do you do that? That is the secret. And you did. It's wonderful on this, because I love the way the songs are put together, and but the fresh take on all of them. So talk about that, how you did that.
I don't know. I just was thinking about, like, if I wasn't a musician, I'd be a history professor. So I was thinking basically of the story that we just talked about, you know, what kind of illustrates more this idea of Dave hearing that beat.
Mm.
And I thought, well, what if you just heard the beat? You know, and then you react to it. And then to make sure that people got it, you heard the beat again and then you react to it. So this idea of sort of trading phrases emerged.
I loved it. I loved it. One of the things that I definitely get with your music, I know what a big influence classical music has had and on your composing and all that. But for my ears, it's throughout your jazz playing too. Hear that classical influence in the loveliest way, not just in that you've got great chops or all the things that people think of. They go, they studied classical, so they have a great understanding of harmony and theory and all that. I hear it in the actual way you put the songs together in a really lovely way.
Oh, well, that's nice. I'm probably more conscious of like the musical substructure, architecture of things, because that's a lot of what you do as a composer. And I found that there are certain things that you do that provide sort of musical, psychological comfort to people. I remember I was working on a big Christmas show thing I did about 25 years ago. And at one point, I thought, hey, maybe I should modulate after the choir is sung and have this big moment. And then a part of me said, oh, but if I modulate, that's so, like, Broadway corny. And then I thought, you know what? But why do they always do that? You know, because maybe it works. And so I did the modulation up a step. And man, it just feels like a giant, like, lotus blossom opens up, you know, when the chorus, and it brings tears to your eyes. And you go, oh, my God. You know, sometimes doing the obvious thing is the right thing to do. You know,
jazz is
full of a history of sort of hipping ourselves right out of existence.
Oh, that's definitely true. Oh, I'm so glad someone else said that, because our listeners are sick of hearing me say that. But I feel that jazz has too often acted like we're hipper than you.
Right.
And then they wonder why no one likes it or people get turned off. And I think it was part of your father's genius, if I can say that, that he took very complex music and these tricky time signatures. There's a very intellectual phrase, tricky, and made them sound natural.
Thank you.
you do that too. I keep feeling that you give these wonderful, you say comfort zones, and we all want that. We don't want to have to think too hard. We want it to be stimulating intellectually, as your mother was saying, and deep and complex, but we don't want it to be hitting us over the head saying, this is intellectual, this is complex, and then we just wear out. Your ears wear out.
Yeah, and believe me, classical music, modern classical music, is far more guilty of that syndrome than jazz. I mean, with jazz, you can make some broad statements that are mostly true, like, you know, with the big band era, they were trying to be improvisationally hip but functional as a dance thing, you know, and then bebop came along. They didn't care if you danced or not. It was like time to swing your butt off and show off your chops. And so the dancing part sort of wasn't necessary anymore. That's kind of cool. In classical music, boy, oh boy, it's like people were trying to impose their new ideas like, you know, serialism or whatever. I mean, if you took out Bernstein and Copland from what was going on in classical music, it would be really tough to know how everyone would have even survived, because they dared to be tonal. You know, I don't know how much crap Copland got, you know, for writing those dogs like Appalachian Spring. Or,
I just love the phrase dared to be tonal.
Yeah, right. Well, and luckily for me, I mean, I got to say, because of having played a lot of my father's classical music and been at the premieres and things like that, my dad in a certain way was kind of unschooled. I mean, in a way, he was like a primitive, which meant that his music had to come from the heart and be beautiful in a certain way. And that is so much more meaningful to an audience. I mean, there's a running joke. It's actually not even a joke. Like, a lot of times people say audiences would sit in the Classical Symphony Hall and they'd see if the composer was still alive, and they go, oh, no, we're going to hate it. You know, because it wasn't an old classic, you know, with that kind of style that had the comfort zone. It was just pushing the edge and all that kind of thing. So in my own approach to classical music, I'm very untrained, although I'm trained in the trenches of doing a lot of performances. And I've never had a composition lesson. No, in the technical sense. And I've seen the beautiful things that my dad has pulled off, and his wonderful musical innate genius and his naivete. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of think, you know what? I don't know if I want to, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm just lazy, but I sort of think like, well, what the heck? There's plenty of guys that went to Harvard and NYU and studied.
Well,
and
this frees you up.
Yeah.
It does free you up, I think, because you're not doing it the way everybody else is doing it. You have permission to go a different way.
Yeah, and I'm really, really eclectic. I can't even help it. But I guess if I'm getting to be known for anything, it's really true. I played in funk bands and soul bands and Irish bands and jazz groups. And, you know, all that stuff pops up in my music.
So only a couple of people have brought me Tower of Power, which, of course, I'm a huge fan of Tower of Power. So when I read that on your list of things that had an influence, and which brought me to Hot Mustard. And you have to talk about this, because I was dancing around the room, and I have to say, I didn't know about this part of your past. Okay. But if anything epitomizes the range of things that you do, this does. So you have to talk about this group and this track. I love it.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, Sky King was an outfit that came out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and we had a deal with Columbia, and we had a record out. And what's really funny about this is that one of our influences that we loved was Tower of Power. And, you know, I like the point, borrowing a classical term, the pointillism of a sophisticated funk. And it kills me all the
phrase.
Time. It kills me all the time when you hear groups that are big that think they're funky and they're too loud to be funky.
Oh, you, how it, wonderful.
Funk doesn't work if it's too loud. You know, it's got to have enough sort of staccato space between the notes.
Well, it has to have that inner funk. Like, if I can say it that way, I feel like if you're really funky, you don't have to be loud. Those are people that are trying to be funky.
Right.
We know we're funky. You don't need to be really loud, that kind of thing.
So anyhow, we all loved Tower of Power. And this group was actually got a demo tape to Steve Cropper, you know, the famous guy from Booker T and the MGs, and he really dug where we were coming from. But Hot Mustard is one of those tunes that we cut with Steve Cropper, and it's an 11. So our idea was like, well, we're borrowing this time odd time signature thing from our father's legacy, but seeing if we can push funk into a multiple time signature thing. And it's great. We had two great rhythm guitarists that love to work off of each other. And what really killed me is last year the Brubeck Brothers was playing in the biggest jazz room in Minneapolis. And as we were leaving to go to the hotel, a guy came up to me and he introduced himself as the guitarist in Tower of Power that were playing there the next day. And he said, will you pose for a picture for me? I said, you want me to put? And it wasn't the same guy, because at this point, there's maybe the third guitarist has been in Tower of Power.
Oh, but that's so sweet.
But he said, my brother's having an operation, and we used to listen to your record, Sky King, all the time. I said, you're kidding. You know, well, you're the influence on us, you know. But he took a picture, and we sent it to his brother. And
like, that's wonderful.
It's just another one of those great things. If you live long enough, all these life ripples, you know, they're going out through the universe, and you just know, you know, the sort of beautiful backsplash.
It's perfect. Yeah. I love it. My guest, Chris Brubeck, with his group Sky King on a 1975 recording of Hot Mustard. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Chris Brubeck has played everything from rock to New Orleans to classical music and feels it has all influenced his compositional approach.
So there's a quote from Stravinsky that's very short and efficient, but I think really, really important. And Stravinsky said that composition is selective improvisation. So that means the same part of your brain that comes up with that idea on the stand that, you know, if you're lucky, it's a little pearl that just came flying out your horn. And the composer is the guy that remembers the pearl and then has the discipline to sit down there and develop it. But they come from the same place in your creativity. And, you know, when I was a little kid, when I look back on it and I see my grandchildren or my own kids, you know, I'm the kind of guy I used to play with toy soldiers. And if I didn't have toy soldiers and we were really poor, I would play with used, like, little jelly things you get at diners. You know, the grape jelly is one army and the strawberry is another. But I was always going like, you know, and it was singing little themes of army things. Like, but I know that's the same place that my real compositions come from, wherever that place is in my brain. And I see kids do that, and I always hearken back to my early days.
And how natural that is to do it.
Yeah.
If worn out of us, it's a natural thing to do.
My youngest brother, Matthew, he actually was whistling melodies in the crib before he could speak.
Wow.
He's a very musical cat.
Now that's impressive. Who's whistling? The baby over there in his crib. Well, what classical, talk about some classical music that's had a big influence on you in terms of your compositions.
Yeah. Well, as a little kid, I just mentioned this Stravinsky quote. I mean, I was totally blown away by Fantasia. And so that Stravinsky, you know, totally excited my senses in all sorts of different directions. And, you know, it's interesting to me that Stravinsky apparently was furious about how his music was used in Fantasia.
I've read that. But why was that? He just didn't like it.
I don't know. They did excerpts of what they chose. And, you know, maybe he says, I will not have my music belittled by dinosaurs or whatever. But I also, it has always made me think that in terms of my own perspective, you know, sometimes you don't know. Like, maybe you think it's horrible that your music was used in one way or another. And, you know, Stravinsky is a genius. And so who am I to tell him? But I'm sorry. I think you're wrong. I think there's millions of people like me that are completely turned on classical music because Disney screwed up your music. You know? And it was so great that they chose it.
Well, you know, absolutely. And you're, again, we come back to exposure.
Yeah.
Because think of all the people that heard that would have never heard that music had they not gone to Fantasia.
So that's huge for me. It's just so exciting. And also, as I got older and more sophisticated, to realize that this jump, I mean, for Stravinsky, where he was at harmonically and rhythmically and what he was doing, is such a leap. It's like the difference between Roy Clark on Hee Haw and Jimi Hendrix. I mean, how did he make that astounding leap into that universe? You know, it's like
that's perfect.
That's amazing for me. And you know, at first, I never. I liked Debussy as a kid. I didn't like Bach and Mozart so much. They were kind of like blue cheese to me or something. I guess it's because I didn't know it intellectually, but Debussy has jazzy chords, sixth and ninths and eleventh and things like that. But later on in life, I got to totally appreciate there's just the perfect architecture of Bach. I mean, I will not be surprised if I have any consciousness, and if there is a heaven, I go there, and it's just playing Bach in heaven, because it's just perfect music. It's just incredible music.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I got you right in between gigs, shooting here. You were in Boston last night or yesterday, right?
Yeah.
And then came here to Manhattan
to
see me.
And then we're going down to the New Jersey Jazz Club or something. The guy that's Pat Martino's manager, producer, is the promoter. Joe D'Onofrio is his name.
And maybe. So you're doing a gig there tonight?
No, tomorrow. Tomorrow.
So that's where you're on your way. Yeah, so I really did get you in between.
Yeah, you really
thank you, Chris. Whoa. This is great. I loved it.
Yeah.
We will do it again.
Cool.
Thank you.
Well, then it's awesome. It's great to have a chance to chat with you. And it's great to talk with, you know, with a person who is full of life and pep and a musician, you know.
No, that's so nice. That's so nice.
You know what's happening.
You've been listening to my conversation with multi-instrumentalist composer Chris Brubeck. I hope you'll join me here next time when I talk with another celebrated creative person about how jazz has inspired their life and work. I'm Judy Carmichael, the host and producer of Jazz Inspired. My production engineers are J.D. Allen and Curtis Heidolf. Our opening music was Airmail Special, and the mid-break music is a smooth one from my CD, High on Fats and Other Stuff. The closing music is Old Fashioned Love from my CD Trio. I'm on piano with Mike Casham on sax and Chris Morey on guitar. You can download podcasts of Jazz Inspired from all the usual places and follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Stride Queen. Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired is made possible with generous support from our listeners and from Steinway & Sons and from Sag Harbor Florist. Visit sagharborflorist.net. For a schedule of upcoming programs, to sign up for our email newsletter, or to find out how you can personally support Jazz Inspired, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter. And special thanks to Henry and Gilda Block, to the Ken Kolker Foundation, John and Jill Walsh, and to Steinway and Sons for their continuing support of Jazz Inspired. For more information, visit jazzinspired.com or judycarmichael.com.